Welcome to the Fern Podcast as the season turns. Released on the first of each month, the episodes follow the changing landscape of the seasons, from the moon and the stars to the tides and the trees. I'm Leah Leyndertz, author of The Almanac, a seasonal guide, and this podcast is a collaboration between myself and Fern, makers of small batch organic perfume. I love wearing fern. In my quest to live in tune with the seasons, applying the season's perfume is a lovely little ritual that reminds me to use all my senses. We hope that this brief guide to the month ahead will awaken you to the rhythms of the year and help you to settle deeper into the seasons. Names for April. April in modern English, April in Scots and Ulster Scots, Averil in Manx, Ebril in Welsh, Ebril in Cornish, Avri in Gerier. The Fasti Praenestini is an ancient Roman calendar carved in marble, or at least the remains of it. Only parts of January, March, April and December survive, but it has left a tantalising clue as to the origins of the name of April. The Roman month Aprilis is derived from aperio, to open, and the Fasti has an idea as to why. Fruits and flowers and animals and lands and seas do open this month, it says. Most of the names for April in the languages of the British Isles appear to have originated with Aprilis, with the possible exceptions of the Irish Gaelic Avrin and the Scots Gaelic Givlin, which may come from Breon, meaning drops of rain. In Old English, the month was Easter Monath, referring not to Christian Easter necessarily, but to its namesake, Istra, goddess of hares, the moon, and the spring. The Romany name for this month was Brishin Descaro. April is a month of sunshine and showers, clear blue perfect skies which then fill with big, fat cumulonimbus clouds, bright lemony sunshine and hefty cloudbursts. It is no wonder, then, that the Romany name for April means month of the rains. These sudden soakings would have been tricky to manage for people essentially living, cooking and working out of doors. If the women and children were out collecting bunches of spring flowers from along the hedgerow bottoms and then bundling them up and taking them into towns to sell from door to door, they would have been in for a thorough soaking, and that would make the rest of the day hard to bear. Although this may have been a slightly trying time to be living out of doors, April has plenty in its favour. The landscape is warming and coming to life, the first butterflies flitting, the birds singing and the flowers starting to bloom. Moving at horse's pace through flower-sprinkled country lanes, coming to life before your eyes, might have been worth the odd soaking. April in the ancient woodland. At April's beginning, buds are starting to show on the trees, but the canopy is still sparse. This means that plenty of sunlight still filters down to the forest floor, heralding one of spring's most stunning sights. Amid the scented hordes of wild garlic and the wild flowers of wood anemones, firm green spikes are shooting up. By the end of the month, they'll have drooped over and split open to reveal heavenly droplets of blue. A bluebell wood is one of those rare wildlife spectacles that looks genuinely magical. The flowers shimmer and spread, some 6 inches above the ground, like a glimmering mist or pool of water. And indeed there is a kind of magic in the ground to make all of this possible. Like wild garlic and wood anemones, bluebells are an ancient woodland indicator species. In some places, they may even remain behind when the trees have gone. Such species are slow to spread and grow, and as we are increasingly aware, rely on ancient links in the earth, connections forged by fungi through which information and nutrients and perhaps less tangible things may be passed. In younger habitats, these networks are far less complex. Like all societies, a woodland must grow and develop, get to know itself. When the trees are cleared and the soil disturbed, a culture is lost that can never be recovered, however many more trees are planted. So while we should still make space for new woods, which after all will someday be ancient too, we must remember that our ancient ones contain whole worlds. On the 1st of April, in Inverness, the sun rises at 6:46 a.m. and sets at 7:56 p.m. In Padstow, it rises at 6:56 a.m. and sets at 7:51 p.m. During the course of April, day length increases by 2 hours and 20 minutes to 15 hours and 29 minutes in Inverness, and by 2 hours and 46 minutes to 14 hours and 40 minutes in Padstow. Cooking from the garden in April. Here are some crops that you might find in the kitchen garden this month. Green garlic, asparagus, sorrel, purple sprouting broccoli, cauliflowers, chard, endive, lettuces, spring onions, radishes, spinach, turnips, cabbages, spring greens, rhubarb, parsley, chervil, and coriander. And some ideas for eating from the garden this month. Cavolo nero roasted in olive oil and salt until crisp at the edges, served topped with a tahini dressing and toasted pumpkin and sunflower seeds. Asparagus, steamed and dipped in soft-boiled eggs, alongside thick toast soldiers. Hot boiled potatoes, tossed in sorrel leaves and butter. Leek and potato soup, with croutons and wild garlic pesto, made by whizzing wild garlic with toasted hazelnuts, grated hard cheese, olive oil, lemon juice and salt. Pizza topped with white sauce, wilted chard, an egg and chunks of taleggio. Moss of the month. Foxtail feather moss grows most often by streams in lowland woods or just above the water level, and it's easy to identify as it has a tree-like appearance with a blackish stem growing below a canopy of wavy green shoots. As you'd expect from the name, it is light and feathery in appearance, rather delicate and attractive. It can detach itself from the ground like tumbleweed, forming a ball, and in places these balls may be found in some numbers. This common moss is a good one to look for yourself if you want to get out in the field. At this time of year, with quick showers and sunshine, mosses seem to glow in vivid colours. Try sketching what you find in green pastels or inks, or take close-up photos on your phone to aid identification. It's an absorbing hobby, and there are many brilliant resources online that you can access for free. Coloured eggs for Easter. Easter's association with eggs is one of the great threads that stretches from the present back into the ancient past. We know that eggs are partly associated with Easter because egg-free Lent created a backlog to be eaten, decorated, and rolled down hills with joyful abandon on Easter Sunday. However, there may be far older pagan associations connected to the feeling of rebirth and fertility that comes with the equinox and with moving out of the dark half of the year and into the light. Decorating eggs has a long and certainly pre-Christian tradition in Eastern Europe and Persia. The earliest record of it in the British Isles is in the 13th century, when King Edward I ordered 450 eggs to be decorated as Easter gifts, though the practice may well have been going on unrecorded for some time before that. To decorate an egg, first make a small hole at the top and another at the bottom. Put your mouth to the top hole and blow the egg contents into a bowl, saving them for an eggy dish. Wash the egg through and then paint, felt tip or stick designs on it. Give decorated eggs to friends and family as a symbol of this hopeful and expectant moment in the year.
I'm hungry, so I take a basket and go for a wander through the garden. Here in the vegetable patch, where I've turned the earth ready for new seeds, there is bound to be chickweed, weaving its tangly green carpet. It's sweet and juicy and a delight to the forager who has waited so long for fresh leafy growth. We can add to it some of these young dandelion leaves for a bitter tang and cleansing goodness. Over here, in the shade of the hedge, there is plenty of ground elder, which, like all good edible weeds, will grow back each time you cut it, giving you perpetual greens. My favourite, though, is the wood avens, or Herb Bennett, which we'll find in every corner of this garden since I stopped pulling it out. We'll need the trowel, since it's the roots we are after, and they are best dug in spring. Shake off the earth, give them a good scrub, and simmer them in sugared water. This will give a fragrant, warming syrup that will remind us that this plant is also known as clove root. It's delicious, but not only good food for the soul. The root has been used to repel evil spirits, venomous beasts, the plague, and even clothes moths. But I find the best use for this syrup is to pour it over pancakes. My basket is full, and we haven't even reached the wild garden patch. Let's go and see what nature has decided to grow there this year. The wild patch is a longer tradition than you might think, even if wildflower meadow and woodland seed mixes are a relatively new sight at the garden centre. Many gardeners have left a corner for the nature spirits, to atone for the human interference elsewhere, in the hope that the green man or the white goddess might give their blessings. The wild patch was an important part of the famous garden at Findhorn, where the gardeners were aided and advised by a whole host of plant and nature spirits. Starting with no more than a patch of sand, they nevertheless grew extraordinarily large and healthy vegetables, which they put down to their efforts in keeping the nature spirits happy. But there are so many delicious wild plants to eat if we pick them with care. In my own wild patch, I can see some hogweed shoots just poking up, and the rosette of an evening primrose, both such generous plants with beautiful edible gifts. I'd have called them weeds a few years ago. Now I'll give a nod to the green man, peering out from the ivy over there, and look forward to eating fried hogweed shoots for tea.
The sky this month. By the end of the month, Venus, Mars, Jupiter and Saturn will all lie close to the direction of the sun and will be unobservable. On the 10th, though, there is a brief close approach of the Moon and Jupiter. They will appear in the dusk in the west at around 8:30 p.m. They will set at 10 p.m. in the northwest. On the 8th, there will be a total eclipse of the sun, visible from northern Mexico, the United States and eastern parts of Canada, but not from the UK and Ireland. The partial phase will be visible from the eastern Pacific Ocean, North and Central America, excluding Alaska, most of the Caribbean, Greenland, and the North Atlantic Ocean. The plough, a well-known asterism within Ursa Major, the Great Bear, rides high in the sky in spring. If you picture the plough as a saucepan, the point where the handle kinks is where you will find Mizar and Alcor. For a long time, Mizar and Alcor were thought to be twin stars, so close together as to have earned the name Horse and Rider. On closer inspection with telescopes, it has become apparent that Mizar and Alcor are in fact just the brightest stars in a six-star system. Mizar comprises two sets of binary stars, making it a quadruple star, and Alcor is a binary star. When you look at this corner of the plough, you are actually looking at a tiny star cluster. They are all thought to have the same origin, the same collapsing cloud of interstellar gas, and they are locked in orbit with each other. In fact, they share birth origins with several other stars in Ursa Major. the remains of a disintegrating star cluster, now widely scattered across the springtime night sky.
All right. So now we're up to April.
Yeah, April is a funny one because for me, April is about suffering. And for me, like, this song is about sacrifice and cycles of behavior and the push and pull of what we've learned from our previous generations.
Okay.
Like, we talk about this a lot, don't we, in long journeys?
Maybe in April you take a long journey.
I think we do a lot of touring over Easter, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I like to go out and see the world afresh in that time. Should we start it?
Thank you.
April's moon phases. The last quarter moon will fall on the 2nd of April. The new moon will fall on the 8th of April. The first quarter is on the 15th of April, and the full moon is on the 24th of April. April's full moon is known as the budding moon, new shoots moon, or seed moon. Average sea temperatures this month in St Andrews in Scotland are 7.5 degrees Celsius, and in St Austell in Cornwall, 10 degrees Celsius. Spring tides are the most extreme tides of the month, with the highest rises and the lowest falls, and they follow a couple of days after the full moon and new moon. These are the times to choose a low tide and go rock pooling, mudlarking, or coastal fossil hunting. Neap tides are the least extreme, with the smallest movement, and they fall in between the spring tides. Spring tides this month will fall on the 9th to the 11th and the 24th to the 26th. Neap tides will be around the 2nd to the 4th and the 16th to the 18th. Here is an ancient Greek story about Ursa Major, the Great Bear, which watches over the little bear, Ursa Minor, nearby in the sky. The beautiful wood nymph Callisto was among the devotees to Artemis, the goddess of hunting, and followed her through the forest with her bow and arrow, hunting for wild animals. Artemis demanded total devotion from her followers, but one day Callisto was spotted in the forest by the god Zeus, who was struck by her beauty and grace and seduced her. She became pregnant and hid this from Artemis for several months. But one day when she was bathing in a forest pool, Artemis saw her and, enraged, expelled her from the group. Callisto was forced to fend for herself in the woods, and there she gave birth to a son, Arcas. When Zeus's wife Hera heard what had happened, she was enraged, and she tracked Callisto down in the forest. Determined that Zeus would never love her again, Hera transformed Callisto into a bear. For a full 16 years, Callisto roamed the forest as a bear, once the hunter, now the hunted. One day she heard the sound of hunters and began to make her escape, but they had strung nets around her lair and created a trap. As she became caught up in the nets, she saw that one of the hunters was her own son, Arcas. She tried to tell him, but all he heard was a roar, and he lifted his bow to kill her. At that moment, Zeus intervened, turning Arcas into a bear cub so that he could understand his mother's cries. He threw them both into the skies and set them there among the stars, the great bear and her bear cub. April's perfume ingredient. Rhubarb Accord. For spring 24, fern has created a fragrance that's particularly close to my heart, as it's inspired by one of my favourite springtime treats, forced rhubarb. Forcing is the process of bringing forward the rhubarb harvest by growing the plant in the dark, either under cloches or on a larger scale in sheds or barns. The result is a delightfully sweet, intensely pink stem that makes an exceptional pudding and has a subtle greenish scent that's incredibly Moorish. But rhubarb is one of those plants which has no fragrant oil to extract. So to make a rhubarb fragrance, Fern had to create a new accord. Rhubarb's distinctive sour zing was the first thing to get right. A blend of floral bergamot and bitter orange with sparkling timut pepper almost achieved it, though it was grapefruit's herbaceous acidity that touched on the acute sharpness that was needed. But rhubarb is also sweet, inseparable from thoughts of crumbles and tarts. For this, Fern lit upon Devana, a fragrant herb with an elusive scent, said to smell completely different on each person who wears it, but always with a syrupy, jam-like tone. Clean, fruity buju rounded out the accord, connecting the citrus sharpness and herbal sweetness. In the course of their rhubarb research, Fern visited the Rhubarb Triangle in West Yorkshire, a 30-square-mile patchwork of farms that have specialised in forcing rhubarb for many years. This is a proud heritage, and to celebrate it, Fern commissioned the Featherstone Male Voice Choir to create An Ode to Rhubarb, which you can hear them singing now.
Rhubarb, rhubarb, behold this plant a lot. Of all the things that crumble, it should never be forgot. In old West Yorkshire, we fought these stalks to grow. And when it's time to harvest them, it's off to work we go. Rhubarb, rhubarb, what a lovely thing. Put it in a crumble, even marmalade and gin. Rhubarb, rhubarb, what a lovely smell. Is it a root or is it a fruit? The food we love so well.
For a more in-depth look at this farming tradition, head to fern.co/rhubarb to watch the short documentary Fern made about a family of fifth-generation rhubarb farmers based near Bradford. Thank you for listening to this month's episode. Please do like and subscribe. All episodes are released on the first of each month. This episode was April, the fourth in our 2024 series. I'm Leah Lane-Dertz, and if you enjoyed this podcast, you will also enjoy my book, The Almanac, A Seasonal Guide to 2024. This year's theme is In the Garden. As the season turns, is now in its fourth year, so there's lots to explore for each month. April's Found Sound with Alice Boyd will be released on Friday the 19th. Do subscribe to be notified. Found Sounds are a new addition to As the Season Turns for 2024, exploring the sounds of a wild place in Britain. These mini-episodes are for listeners who wish to feel that little bit more immersed in the natural world as we move through the year. A meditation of sorts, crafted from field recordings and interviews. This podcast is produced by Jeff Bird. Catriona Bolt is the production coordinator. In addition to my own contributions, Zoe Gilbert, author of Mischief Acts, wrote and read The Weed Stories. The folk song was played by The Breath, Rhianna Connolly, and Stuart McCallum, who also provided music for the intro. This podcast has been created by Fern. Fern is an organic fragrance maker based in Somerset. Working with the rhythms of the seasons, they blend, barrel age, and bottle 4 fragrances a year. Each fragrance is made to order for the names on the Fern Production Ledger. To join the ledger and find out more, visit www.fern.co or visit the link in the podcast description.